Now that ends the 21st chapter of 1 Samuel, and as we move into the 22nd chapter, verse 1 says, David therefore departed thence, and escaped to the cave of Adullam. So David, at his first opportunity, left this place. He left Gath, and he was allowed by the people to do so, and it seems it was only because he had feigned this madness that he was able to do this. Of course, we know that God had a hand in this. God allowed David to escape, and in the Psalms, David does write about this, and he says very plainly there that the Lord delivered him, the Lord gave him salvation. So now he flees back into the land of Israel to a place here called the Cave Adullam, and so he is out of the territory of the Philistines at this time. This city of Adullam was an ancient city. It had been conquered by the Israelites when they came into this land of Canaan originally. And so David found a cave nearby and set up refuge there and made this his headquarters. And verse 1 further says, "And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him." So here his family comes and meets with him at this cave. And at this family reunion, there are some great decisions made as to what David's going to do to not only protect himself, but to see about the further protection of his family. So it seems that his brothers are casting their lot with David, either to help and defend David or to go down with David, whichever. And so when his brother and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. They met him in this cave at Adullam. And this shows the family unity, the family harmony, even in time of great distress, when it seems that it was a very dangerous thing just to be found in this nation. The family rallied around David. It is thought that at this time David wrote the 142nd Psalm. Also, this situation on this occasion may very well be one of the things that the Apostle Paul had reference to in Hebrews 11:38 when he talks about the Old Testament worthies that wandered in deserts, in dens, and in caves of the earth. And here is the man that was destined to do such great things for Israel, but yet at this time, patience was required. He must wait upon the Lord, wait till the Lord was ready, for he at this time was cast aside as though he were some vessel that no longer had any use. And verse 2 says, "And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were about with him about 400 men. So David has a small army, and this is not an army to take a lot of pride in, because these were the discontented. These were the ones that were in debt and they were in distress. These were the ones that were not the great people, the rich people, the princes of the land. These were the dregs of society, so to speak. But they rallied themselves around David. And we see that David has decided that he can't just flee and be successful, but he must be able to defend himself. And so he has an army here that is a defensive army. David never acts in offense. He never puts the king under any kind of a threat. He doesn't do anything to cause discontent or unrest or lack of peace in the land, but he's simply a man now that is defending himself. And he has these 400 men there with him, along with his brothers. Verse 3, "And David went thence to Mizpah of Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you, till I know what God will do for me." So he decides that he must get his parents out of the country. He goes down to Moab, there to the king of Moab, and he asks the king to let his family, let his parents take residence there. And we see that this is David's fondness and love and care for his parents. He wants his parents to be in a safe place while all this unrest is about, until he has this thing settled one way or another. And he knows that it would not be good for his parents to be caught in the middle of this. They could even suffer some great harm. They could even be put to death by those that were seeking after David. And he also says in this third verse, "Till I know what God will do for me." He's waiting to see what God's going to do. He's waiting to see what God is planning for him. what the outcome is going to be, because he has placed his destiny now in the hands of God. He looks upon God as being his deliverer, and consequently then he is depending upon God. So he's in a state now of being in a hold. He's in a state of waiting upon the Lord. And while he is in that condition, he has made arrangements for his family to be in a safe place. Verse 4, "And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold." All the time David was hiding out, his family had to go to another country, into Moab, for safety. Verse 5, "And the prophet Gad said unto David." Now somewhere along the way he met up with this prophet Gad, maybe back at the cave of Adullam. And even though David was a prophet, we know that he welcomed the views and the assistance of this prophet Gad. And let's notice the advice that this prophet gives David. He says, "Abide not in the hold. Depart, and get thee into the land of Judah." So he tells David to get up out of this cave, stop hiding out, stop being a recluse, to go on into the land of Judah. Not to leave his country, but there he's going to have to face certain things that are coming up until this matter is settled. "Then David departed and came into the forest of Hareth." Now, of course, this forest of Hareth is in the land of Judah. It's a few miles south of this cave that he was in Adullam. And here David is waiting to see what turn of events the Lord will bring about. Now, beginning in verse 6, the scene shifts back to Saul the king. "When Saul heard that David was discovered, and the men that were with him..." Now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. So here we see the situation with Saul. He is under a tree in Ramah. That is, he's out in the open. He has his men with him. He is presiding like a madman. He has his spear in his hand, using it as a scepter, showing his power, showing the fact that none should cross him. And so now Saul begins to accuse his servants. He's trying to goad them into further action against David. And verse 7 says, "Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards, and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds?" Here these men were Benjamites. And David was a son of Jesse. He was a son of the tribe of Judah. And so he's telling them, if David becomes king, he's not going to give you the positions you have now. He's going to take these positions away from you. He's not going to do anything for the tribe of Benjamin. Everything's going to go to the tribe of Judah. And he's trying to get them to conspire also against David. And he further charges in verse 8, and these are false charges now, "that all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse." Now, the league that his son had made with David, Jonathan made with David, was nothing against Saul. It was simply a league that when David did become king, and this could have been after the natural death of Saul, that David would look favorably upon the family of Jonathan. There was no league made to depose Saul from being king. There was no league made to overthrow Saul in any kind of way or to bring about any harm to Saul. But yet Saul interpreted it this way. And he said, "None of you have showed me that my son made this league with the son of Jesse, with David. You all have conspired in this. You have all acted against me." And he further says, "There is none of you that is sorry for me. You don't feel any compassion for me. You don't feel any feeling toward my predicament or my plight." And actually, David had done nothing against Saul. It wasn't David that was pursuing after Saul. It was Saul that was pursuing after David. And he further says, "Or showeth unto me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day." And of course, Jonathan had not done that. He hadn't stirred up David to lay in wait against Saul. David took no offensive action at all against Saul. All of David's actions were either in flight or in hiding or in defense. No offensive action. Had Saul simply backed off and left David alone, we have no reason to believe that any kind of harm would have come to Saul as a result of David's actions. True, David was anointed to be king. David was destined to be king. And Saul was anointed to lose his kingship. But it was because of Saul's sin, not because of any offensive act on the part of David. And David would have been contented to have waited until Saul died a natural death, until Saul served out the length of his days before taking over as king. After all, the idea of being king wasn't David's idea, it was God's idea. Saul needed to make things right with God, not to make things hard for David. But this is the accusation that he makes to his servants. He puts his servants on the spot. You've put yourself in the position, he says, of backing a man that's going to take away all of your high authority in this nation. He's not going to give you Benjamites anything. You've sided in with my son, who made a league with David. You didn't tell me about this league that he made. And you haven't exposed the actions of my son in stirring up David against me, which all of these were false charges. But you see what a position he puts these men in now. They are on the defensive now. They have to go over and beyond ordinary service to prove to Saul that they are really against David and not for David. So this stirs a lot of animosity against David, falsely so, but nevertheless it has the effect of making the army really turn against David, because they're trying to prove to Saul that they're not really backing David. So verse 9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, we remember that Doeg was the man who was at Nob, at the tabernacle, performing some kind of ceremonial service at the time that David came to the priest Ahimelech and asked him for bread, and also got the sword of Goliath. Doeg observed all this. And so now that Saul puts the big pressure on everyone to back him, Doeg steps forward, and he is going to tell Saul what he said. He said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. So Doeg tells all that he saw. He incriminates Ahimelech the priest, and he tells him that he gave David bread, he gave him the sword, and that he inquired of the Lord for him. So we can see how that Saul now, not having anyone else to turn on, is going to turn all of his wrath toward Ahimelech. He now, in his madness, in his insane jealousy and envy and fury, he now is going to accuse the priests of turning against him, the priest of aiding and abetting his enemy, the priest of doing things to David that he should not have done, and consequently it's going to bring about a very great slaughter of these priests. And the way Saul was able to learn about this was because this man Doeg the Edomite, who was not a true Israelite, he no doubt was simply a proselyte. He had been raised in a different type of background than a true Israelite would have been raised. He decided to tell what he knew against the priest. And Saul, who was looking for any shred of evidence that anyone, any place, has assisted David, he pounces upon this information, and he used it to the very utmost to bring about an expression of his wrath against David. Well, our time has expired at this point, and that brings this portion of our lesson to a close. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.